Pantene's baby.
Hello and welcome to the Tech Podcast. Nobody asked for it, but y'all seem to like. It's called Two and a Half Bens.
Except for that one person who doesn't like it. And screw you, buddy.
Exactly. Yes, we are the Tech Podcast that is not hosted by a chief twit or, I don't know, some former washed up MTV VJ. No, we're just us.
Shots fired, sir.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm phone blind.
Oh, God help us. I'm still Phoenix.
And I'm Sir Bemrose.
All right. Anyway, so
now that we got all that bullshit out of the way, let's get to the meat of the bullshit.
Let's get to the meat of the bullshit. So, all right. I've got something.
Yes, the mute button is off. The record button is on.
Yes, it is. Exactly. Even the backup recording is on.
You know,
too.
That might actually be a good show title. The mute button is off. The record button is on.
That's right. Exactly. All of that. Anyway, I should actually do that. But anyway, this was a big story that came across when it. So it was a 3-day weekend, and so I did not open up my phone, and I was actually kind of very behind on, like, just kind of reading things in general. So I wake up on Tuesday morning. Internally, I get a message from our into one of our group of, like, evangelists and stuff, and so I get news of, well, this story that's basically the ongoing fallout of a breach at AI chatbot maker SalesLoft.
And that was actually on the cutting room floor of my notes last week.
Yeah.
I was like ready to bring that one and then went, no, we've had a long enough show and it's a little security-ish. I don't know if you
know. No, this is so, but
yeah. The shit hit the fan. La 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 la.
Yeah, exactly. The shit hit the fan. That's exactly happened. The shit hit the fan.
It's been slowly exploding for about 3 weeks now.
Exactly. But it became an issue right when the. So I'll read this because this is actually when Krebs, so you know, so this is the internet's IDS, Brian Krebs, right? He writes the recent mass theft of authentication tokens from SalesLoft, whose AI chatbot is used by a broad swath of corporate America to convert customer interaction into Salesforce leads, and has left many companies racing to invalidate the stolen credentials before hackers can exploit them. Now Google warns the breach goes far beyond access to Salesforce data, noting the hackers are responsible also stole valid authentication tokens for hundreds of online services that customers can integrate with SalesLoft, including Slack, Google Workspace, Amazon S3, Microsoft Azure, and OpenAI. And
wasn't it a great idea way back in the day for everybody to have just a single login and a single account for every service online? That was the thing that people like Google and Microsoft were pushing for back in the day. They were like, this makes everything easy. Yeah, for the hackers.
Yes, exactly.
Well, yeah, and don't forget the fact that, is it just me, or does it seem like every time you turn around, we're hearing that Amazon's S3 has fucked off again and caused something to completely go tits up for Harambe?
Yeah. So, all right. So here, okay. So I think we need to explain a few things to our listeners here, because I think it's actually so. Sales, understand that. Okay. So if you don't know, when I had brought this story to Phoenix originally, she didn't know what Salesforce was, and I had to explain it to her. Right. So Salesforce is it's what they call customer relationship management software that's hosted in the cloud. It's one of the it's been around. Ever.
It's bullshit.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of money in bullshit.
There's a lot of money in bullshit. However, a lot of companies use it to store customer information in, right? So you get access to Salesforce, you get access to a whole lot of shit, right? I mean, it's kind of, and then of course all the other stuff. And by the way, this was caused by an AI chatbot that was giving out too much information and it was getting hacked. So
it was just trying to be helpful.
Yes, I know. But maybe hooking your shit up to something with right access to the back end is not good.
Just really? Saying. Really?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Are you fucking kidding? Have you not been listening since the inception of this particular show where we've talked about how completely unreliable, unstable, and unhinged AI is? Did you sleep through the last 4 or 5 episodes?
No, I also slept through the previous 194 episodes of The Lotus Effect. No, I didn't. Yeah, we weren't covering AI back then, but anyway.
Where's my fucking bell?
Your bell?
You stole
your bell.
My bell.
No, your bell. I see your bell. It's right there, see?
Hey, that's not my bell.
Yeah, that is your... I'll ring your bell.
right. Hey, this ain't the Lotus Effect now.
All right. Yeah. Down wrong now. Show, people.
All right, but I mean, just this is, I mean, and I see, and I mean, I see stories, and you know, actually, what's funny about this is, two cybersecurity vendors were also affected by this same thing.
Yeah,
you know.
By the way, I pulled up just my notes from last week, and I wanted to pull out this one little piece of information that Google advised. This is all from the story that I wrote up last week for this very show a week ago. A lot has happened since then, but this was. The state of it a week ago was, quote, a wave of Salesforce data theft attacks has impacted numerous companies this year, including Google, Farmers Insurance, Allianz Life, Allianz, Workday, Pandora, Cisco, Chanel, and Qantas. And that was just the ones that Bleeping Computer could come up with off the top of their head, had already been hacked through this exact channel. And that Google had advised, quote, consider all security tokens connected to the platform to be compromised. That is not a light statement.
No.
Yeah, that pretty much means game over, man. Game over. All right. Yeah. Well, we don't play that until the very end of the show, however. But anyway, because I have that clip loaded. But yeah, but it's amazing. It's like this kind of stuff, right? Because companies are being, you know, really. I don't know. What's the word?
They're being slack as hell with the guardrails and parameters that they're putting on this AI.
Yeah, they're not. Well, they're not putting. Well, the guardrail. We know the guardrails can be broken. So, you know, OK, so.
Well, but how do you break something that's not even there? That's what we're saying.
Oh, no. They try to put guardrails in. They're not there, though.
Paper fucking.
I mean, we've talked about this before. There's two things that just ran headlong into each other. One is that. The C-suite's CEO-osphere in Silicon Valley has been infected with the tech fad AI hype that says, hey, AI can do everything. And we know it's true because the other CEOs are saying it. And they're all saying it because the other CEOs are saying, yeah, it's mass formation that works only at the CEO and level. And it's convincing everybody that you can do everything with AI. And then the second thing that we're running into is the idea that we've talked about that security is a cost center and companies, bean counters, look at this and say, why are we spending all this on security? We're not even getting hacked. And they cut security because, oh, it doesn't really matter unless we're getting hacked, right? And then guess what? You get hacked.
Yes,
exactly.
And they ain't stopping. And, you know, of course, I could have pulled the stories where even from my own employer's blog, where AI is being used to take tasks that used to take however long to be done in like, you know, like minutes kind of. And it's, you know, this technology. I mean, the technology in the right hands might do something, but I don't think I'm not OK with this technology being in the hands of just anybody. And yeah, I mean. Anyway,
but that's that when a new technology comes out, that's the only way to make it fair.
Well, exactly. And
what's better, putting it in the hands of everybody? Yeah. Okay. Bad people are going to get it. You know, if you put it in the hands of everybody, then yeah, some bad people might get it. Or you could limit it to only the super wealthy corporate owners. And then you are guaranteed that bad people will have it. And there's no defense. So I'm not. The problem is ultimately. You know, technology comes out. People don't know how to deal with it. People eventually learn how to deal with it. But in the time in between, a lot of crazy shit happens. That's the story of every new technology for the last, I don't know, 10,000 years.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. We cope with it. And then we lose our, we collectively lose our minds. And sometimes, you know, sometimes revolutions occur. Who knows? Right. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I mean, I know Dvorak likes to talk about cycles, and honestly, if you look at nature, it's got cycles all over it. So yeah, there's lots of cycles to this stuff. And
okay, but would I be erroneous in saying that basically since AI became mainstream circa what the last year or two, we'll
yeah,
say?
Well, I will, and I will. Okay,
5 years.
Yeah, I would say it was okay. So,
but the point. That actually strengthens the point I was going to make, that it's getting progressively worse.
Yeah.
As time goes on,
yeah.
And they find more and more ways to integrate this into literally everything.
Yeah. So
the shitification level rises higher and higher.
Yeah.
The reason why nature is completely full of cycles is that you get a cycle everywhere that a negative feedback loop pops up, and nature is absolutely full of that. Something starts going out of line, goes too far, consequences occur, negative feedback happens, pulls it back into line, pulls it all the way back. Eventually it's back in line. You don't need the mechanism that was pushing against it, and then it starts to grow again. That's a cycle. That nature is full of those, and we are looking at the same technological cycle now with this AI stuff where, you know, it first thing comes out, it's whiz bang. It is the coolest tech demo ever. We, you know, you look at all this, the dreamers and tech enthusiasts are like, oh my God, think of all the things you could do with it. They convince the companies try to do all the things with it. This, by the way, is how innovation happens, but it happens in the same way that evolution happens. It's really freaking messy. And eventually something good comes out and 100,000 things that are not good all eventually die. But the process is like making sausage. Yes, technology is going to correct itself. You can already see the negative feedback against AI with people not trusting it. People going absolutely batshit insane and other people looking at this going, whoa, maybe I shouldn't talk to my chatbot as much because this person went crazy. People are finally starting to adjust. And once they adjust, you're going to see most of the craziness brought in line. And then we'll end up at a location that won't be exactly where we started. But every technology does this. That I don't know why I'm hammering this point so much other than I look at this and I'm reacting to all of the straw men who are constantly filling up my feed and my news stories every single day about how, oh my God, the entire world will never be the same because AI is changing everything. AI is a new technology that is not fundamentally changing the world in kind. It's just changing in degree. We're moving the pieces around, but it's the same game board.
I think this, so, okay, so one of the, I actually put in the chat, when you were doing this rant, I was thinking about the Gartner hype cycle, right, for any new technology. Ooh. Which I think is actually relevant to this.
Visual aids, I love it.
Yeah, visual aids, right, because, you know, so, you know, there's, yeah, so we're kind of, so if you actually look at the actual diagram here, yes, I can't believe I actually did, but, yeah, so, you know, we're in that kind of peak of inflated expectations, and it's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I think we're very close to the peak. I don't know if we're on the upslope or the downslope. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you get up to that top, but that's pretty much, that's kind of where we are with it. Right?
I would gauge we're probably just crested the peak and starting the down only because, you know, the trough of disillusionment is going to rapidly approach the more these chatbots convince people of their... I also think that
where you are on that is different per person.
Oh, completely.
For example, I live my life in disillusionment. I'm like, you know, like new technology comes out. I'm like, and okay, it sucks. Next.
Yeah.
Which people don't want to hear.
Yeah, yeah. You're pretty much living the trough of disillusionment there, Sir Pembrose.
I've got a cabin there. It's very nice.
Yes. We've been there. Yes. And we do. We agree.
It's right near that beautiful retreat in the Uncanny Valley.
I thought it was interesting that you brought up the cycles. I literally am on the chapter in my environmental science course that talks about that exact thing with the negative feedback loop and all. That's just so kismet that you brought that up.
That's because I am awesome and also hooked into all things. And no, I don't think I can go there.
No, you just truly threw a dart in the dark and hit a fucking target.
Yes, yes. Well, wisdom is wisdom. Every once in a while, academia can even stumble onto the same kind of wisdom that I'm coming up with every single day.
Yeah, and even a blind squirrel gets a nut once in a while.
Well, a blind squirrel can still get his nut, but anyway, that's a different show.
Okay, I got to read a quote from, don't ask me why I was at Reddit. But I picked this up on Reddit and
nothing good to when you go.
Yeah,
to Reddit.
Well, there's that. But Does anybody here, have you ever heard of Subreddit Simulator?
No, I have not. I had to explain Reddit the other day.
This was a subreddit that was big around 2015. And what it was somebody decided to go build a subreddit where all real user accounts were locked down and banned from posting. And then they built a whole bunch of bots that did nothing but bring in random comments from other subreddits, put posts together, and then use Markov chains to create comments and entire threads. And you could read and watch this happen, but no human could post. It was entirely bots using Markov chains. And it was absolutely fascinating around 2015 or so.
All of that Markov chain stuff. I remember that when you started doing anything with stuff.
Yeah. Petered out maybe 5-6 years ago. But, I remember reading it at the time and going, yeah, this is fascinating and also totally inane. And, you can tell that it's bots, but they're almost down to the average level of intelligence of a Reddit user. But just the other day, I saw this interaction. I had to write it down. It says, hey, does anybody here remember Subreddit Simulator? Oh, yeah. Well, whatever happened to it? Oh, it's just called Reddit now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That would also be most of the content on YouTube now that surfaces, it seems.
Yeah.
It's objectively horrible.
And it comes down to there's a theory called the dead internet theory, which basically is... When I was reading about this one, they said it is a conspiracy theory. Well, maybe, but that doesn't mean it's wrong. The theory is there are almost no actual people on the internet, and almost all of it now is entirely computer generated crap. The question that I have is what is almost all? Because there's obviously going to be a line between this much is computer generated crap and this much is human generated crap. And where's the line? I think the line is moving. I think, it's an interesting thought experiment. I think there's still a lot of people out there.
I think there's indelible proof that line is moving at a rapid rate and not in the proper direction. Almost everything so far that I have come across in the last, I'll call it 2 weeks, if it was not a cop cam video, if it was like one of the Sinister Stories or Mr. Grimm's, and yeah, I'm gonna fucking dox the fuck out of them. Yeah, they're AIing the shit out of it. It's so gross. And it's like, hit that subscribe button. Why? Why am I gonna support the fact you're doing jack shit for work? You're entering a couple of lines into a fucking LLM and it's spitting out the script that you then think you should get paid for doing. Are you joking? How very dare you?
Yeah, the whole notebook LM thing. Okay, I'm going to wait until I
actually
want
to point out I'm offended the fact that you had to bring an AI story, and I expressly avoided bringing in an AI story because I'm sick of talking about AI.
But you started a tech news podcast. What did you expect? It's the only thing in tech news.
No, I actually found three. Okay, fuck you too. Stories that weren't AI.
Why don't we move on to your story? Because I think what if it's related or not? I've got a story, but I'll come back.
AI story later.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
What, that put me on the hot speed?
Yes,
on the
it
hot
did. Spot? So she, yes.
Yeah, welcome.
Fuck you guys. I don't even have a soundboard. This is so sad. Okay, I can't even appropriately.
Fuck you!
There you go. Not fair, you guys. Okay, so trigger warning at least for Phone Boy, and I'm not sorry about this, because the programming language Perl was once everywhere, or at least it felt that way, and around the turn of the millennium, it seemed that almost every website was built on the back of this scripting language. And this article goes on to fap about how it was, it truly was such an odd language, because you could program something in Perl, go to bed, wake up the next morning and look at your code and be like, what the fuck did I just write?
I, I've always referred to Perl as a write-only computer language.
And honestly, that's exactly what this article talked about, is that it's truly a write-only language, like period dot. Anyone yeah, like trying
if,
to
it, how do you fix it? A bug in a Perl program? You rewrite it.
Yeah, and then you'll find different bugs. So I have a Perl story. So I remember this was 1995, because I had graduated, because I had just graduated from the Jesuit university I went to, and I still had access to do things, and we had developed a framework to we had a bunch of Unix computers, and we had to install software and do shit on them. And so this framework was developed, or basically a series of scripts was to do things like install programs and a bunch of maintenance stuff. And so one weekend I decided to rewrite it in Perl. Oh, I took the computer lab down. Yeah, you can cut yourself really hard with Perl. And yeah, the early versions of phoneboy.com also had Perl on the back end. So,
I almost got expelled once for running a fork bomb.
Oh, jeez. My goodness.
Okay, would someone like to explain to a Phoenix what the fuck he just said?
A fork bomb. So one of the things you can do in a process. So when you fork a process, you're creating a new process from the current point, right? And if you keep forking.
It's how in a Unix type system. The way that new processes get created is a process it'll call a function called fork, which actually creates two processes that both continue from that position. And the fork function will return whether you're in the parent or the child process. And then depending on which one you do, the child process will usually load new code and run that.
Yeah, I remember in your Linux class last time, I think they actually did say that. I'm now remembering.
It's possible, but yeah.
The way a fork bomb works is you completely ignore the return value, and you just call fork in a tight loop.
Kill the PID?
Well, you can.
Well, in the first few microseconds, you suddenly have 10,000 processes, because every time it goes through the loop, it starts the loop. There's one process. It goes to the end of the loop. There's two processes, both running the same loop. Then each of those runs, and now there's four processes running the same loop. And then each of those runs the next time. And you know how fast a tight loop can go in a computer.
And they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and so on and so on.
Exactly. That's literally like the visual of two becomes four becomes eight becomes holy fucking shit, you have an entire screen.
And so within a second or two, you have used up all of the possible resources on the computer. And if your system, was, say, back in the 90s, a lot of these systems didn't have silly little things like, per user process limits and things like that. So it just kind of uses up all the CPU and all of the memory and everything, and starves out processing time for everybody else logged into the machine, which when it's a very large public shared mainframe with thousands of users on it can get a person expelled.
Yeah. Or get you kicked off of a commercial ISP.
Wait a minute. So you said you almost got expelled. What saved you?
Fast talking.
He said fast talking.
Yeah. I got called into the vice president of IT's office and basically dressed down, and he shows me a printout of the program that I wrote. Like I thought I was going to get away with it. Believe it or not, I did not know. I had never heard the term fork bomb at the time. I just was like, I wonder what would happen if I did this, because of course I like screwing with things. It didn't really occur to me that, oh, it's going to take the whole system down. And in any system today, if the person who set up the system is worth anything, what you've got is some strong per user limits, and you're going to hit the per user process limit. And then the system is just going to say, okay, well, we're going to start failing these calls to fork because this user is using up more resources than they need. But
right.
It didn't occur to me back then, and there weren't the guards or anything. And yeah, I'm sure that they probably spent a lot of time trying to figure out why the entire shared system for all of the CS classes suddenly went down.
Yeah. Incidents like the Clifford stole Cuckoo's Egg thing, is why we have those things in Unix.
That I was a good a good student, in fact, you know, honor student, top of the class, etc., that I had never done anything like this before, and that I clearly didn't even know what the term fork bomb meant, suggested to them, they're like, okay, so you weren't trying to take the system down. I was like, no, I was just screwing around. Oh, well, don't do that. Okay, won't.
Yeah. Well, at least these days now we can screw around on our own computer and not fuck with everybody else. If we, if we fuck it up.
At the time, I didn't have a Linux system or a Unix system in my at home. So
yeah, I know.
Where was I supposed to run it?
Well, well, this is true. I remember. Okay, so I was in college when Linux came out and became a thing, and people were downloading, you know, Slackware on 33.
Yeah, this wasn't Linux, by the way. This was Unix.
Unix. Yeah, Unix. Yeah, Unix and Linux are they're related, but not exactly the same, right? They anyway, but. But yeah, that's where people started actually using it. I mean, you know, you might have had some. I mean, I ran NetBSD on a Mac. I did all kinds of crap with it, with these different Unix and Linux type operating systems and getting to play with them. But I remember all that came out and you could buy the CDs and stuff. But geez, it's oh my God. Anyway, I'm old and I need to.
So to drag it back to where I was at with the Perl language, I think it's kind of imperative. Because of the fact that this is truly a language that, like you said, it's a write-only language. But honestly, it's just not feasible for it to be parsable by machines. You know?
Well, I mean, it parses it. It just, yeah. But the problem is you don't know exactly what it's going to do. I mean, yeah. I mean, in order to learn Perl, you have to learn something called regular expressions. And oh my God, regular expressions make my brain hurt. You know, I mean,
they make everybody's brain hurt.
Yes, exactly.
But the one thing you know about coding in Perl is a human wrote it. I mean, that's the takeaway. Yeah.
Perl is also quite possibly the closest language that anybody has ever come up with to have building an interpreter of line noise.
Interpreter of line noise. That sounds like a great.
I mean, I used to use the phrase syntax complete language for a hypothetical language in which every possible input string was a valid program. This was the theoretical part of computer science back when I was studying, you know, things like halting problems and stuff. And I came up with the idea of a syntax complete language, which was a language where every single possible input string was a valid program. And I ended up proving that there was no way to build a language that didn't have any syntax error states at all, but it was close. And then we, you know, started checking. And by an extremely wide margin, Perl was the closest language to being that of any language that was available.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, it's the Perl. Like I said, you have to write. Yeah, I'm not sure what's worse, Perl or Java.
Perl. I probably could tolerate.
Well,
Java
it depends on your criteria
better.
For good.
Well, but let's put it this way: which one is least shitty? I mean, come on.
I mean,
again,
you know, Python.
Yeah. Oh my God. Fuck. No, I literally am learning Python now because it's required for my friends.
I still like C++ or C++ as some people call it.
Yeah, whatever. Oh my God.
No, you were like, you know, Java is even worse than, like, what is your criteria? Because if you are talking about readability, if you were talking about building a strong syntax, they're completely opposite ends of the spectrum. Perl is a wide open language where pretty much anything you do is a valid program, and it might not do what you want. In fact, it probably won't, because you're not really sure what it's going to do, but it will do something. Yeah. Java is on the other end of the spectrum where unless you find the exact proper incantation and consult some, you know, some programming manuals and an almanac and an astronomical chart, you're probably not going to get it right.
Perl book, dude.
Yeah. And, you know, so they're kind of opposite ends. Perl doesn't even have a compiler. It's interpreted, and anything you do will be a program and it'll do something. Java, on the other hand, has a compiler so strict that you have to spend all of your time just waiting for the compiler to finally bless your program and be like, oh, okay, I guess I'll compile it now. And once you do that, you got a decent chance of it working-ish.
Yeah, because Christ knows how many virgins you've had to sacrifice and pyres you've had to light before that code will compile properly.
And it's, I mean, it is a really long-standing argument amongst various programmers whether it is better to spend your time debugging in an open interpreted language or spend your time, you know, sacrificing goats to the compiler in a strict one. And these days, the strict compiler faction seems to be winning, which is why we have languages like Go and Rust and C Sharp, where the, you know, there's the one true way. You know, if you put a tab instead of a space in Python, you've just screwed up your whole program. If you put a curly brace on the wrong line in Go, it won't compile. I don't know if that's true, but we're basically like close that. To that.
Yeah.
Well, and the government is seriously, there's still this longstanding debate between whether to move off of COBOL and onto Rust.
I say if it ain't broke, don't fucking fix it. But yeah, what do I know?
That's what I say.
Yes, but the people who knew how to program in a language like COBOL are all retired or dying.
Or dead.
And the young people who are replacing them don't really know how to program that close to the metal or anything resembling an algorithm.
Buzzword is vibe coding. It's disgusting.
That's the next generation of coders.
But here's the
current
problem.
Generation of coders, the primary skill for them is go out to Node and download 200 packages of something somebody else wrote and then try to connect them all.
Yeah, because they don't know how to do. Why I didn't run cards against, want to run my own instance of Cards Against Humanity.
They don't know how to write an algorithm themselves, but damn, do they know how to take 64 megabytes of raw packages and libraries and string them all together. And you get Hello World that, you know, weighs in at 120 megabytes. Yes, I've seen that.
But here's the problem. In order to be running those systems that the old gray beards are now, you know, dying or retiring from, I don't know, maybe some accountability to actually have to learn COBOL to take that particular
It's not even
position.
A difficult language.
No, it's not. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, okay, so I went through...
The reference books exist. A lot of them are paper, which is, again, a technology that young people can't figure out. But they exist.
God, yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, I probably, you know, this is back in the 90s. I probably learned about 15 to 20 programming languages. You know, maybe do a little bit more than, you know, the kind of the standard, you know, like loops and, you know, prints and that kind of thing. Nothing real complicated, but yeah. And, you know, and they all kind of do things. They have their own sort of goals and objectives. And I always kind of thought it was weird. I'm like, why do we need all these different languages? And, you know, and once you kind of dig into it, it's like, okay, well, some things perform certain tasks better than others. They had a different use case in mind, right?
Kind of a conspiracy theory behind why they might be pushing so hard to transition to Rust from COBOL. And it could be the fact that maybe there is, you know how we
You know there's
about,
no T in COBOL, right?
I know, I call it COBALT, not COBOL. I get that.
They want to inject malware.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, that's exactly where I was going with this. Is it possible that that particular language has vulnerabilities like we've been talking about, the intentional fuck-ups that they go, oopsie, but it's not really oops. You know, I don't have to remind you all of the clear, the plain clear text that plans to go after enemies were sent by our own government. You know, those Darwin Award winners.
Language itself really doesn't have it's not going to have a lot of vulnerability. Languages in general are, at least the ones, the commonly highly used ones. It's not the language that tends to have the vulnerabilities. It's almost always in the business logic.
Yeah, it's in the program that's written, not the language's program.
If converting your programs to Rust introduces vulnerabilities, then that was done by the person doing the converting by introducing code that wasn't supposed to be there, not as an inherent
characteristic of the program. And this is so far outside of the realm of possibility.
No, it's not.
Okay, I mean, I just wanted to make sure you still had your tinfoil hat firmly affixed to your head. Just
no, guessing. there's two ways that vulnerabilities happen. They're by accident and intentionally.
Yeah, and we've talked extensively about the fact that we think a lot of the vulnerabilities that we're seeing are completely intentional.
And one of the reasons why I don't necessarily like, you know, brand new rewrites for the sake of rewrites is because there are a lot of incentives to doing a rewrite and putting in backdoors.
Yeah,
we lazy coding that doesn't take the backdoor out that you coded in while you were doing all of your shit.
Well, and I mean, I think that, I mean, part of the problem, though, is, and this is, we see this all the time, right? Old code, right? It works, but it wasn't designed to deal with the shit that we deal with, that modern computers deal with today in terms of, you know, threats and that kind of thing. And so you stick that thing anywhere near, a connection to the internet, and, you know, bad shit's going to happen, right? So, you know, if you have to use those old systems, you really want to keep them off the internet. Dear God, like, please. Because,
I would argue that unless there's a system that absolutely requires the internet for its primary purpose, you should probably keep it off the internet anyway.
Valid.
Like control software for power plants probably doesn't need to have open ports on the public web.
I've been saying that for how long?
Yeah, well, but convenience.
You know, the last time that Iran was 2 weeks away from getting nuclear weapons, you know, when Obama was the one screwing it up, how did we stop it? Oh, that's right. All of their control software for the uranium enrichment had public-facing ports that the powers that be stuck malware into it, which would cause the drums to spin up irregularly and vibrate themselves apart, and that's how they destroyed all of the enrichment centers.
Yeah.
That, by the way, actually happened about 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's called Stuxnet.
Yeah, was that okay, I didn't remember the name.
It was something very much like it that happened about 10 years ago, so.
Yeah, so.
But it just strengthens the exact point. There's something going on behind the scenes that they don't want us to know about, but the Bens and Bernadettes are smart enough to see through the veil of bullshit.
Some of them are.
Well, yes. Yeah, so, I mean,
some those, of them are.
Those who aren't bought in, because I can assure you, there is a flyer on the board at school about ORNL internships, and I'm just like, not sure I want to dance that close to the fire.
I mean, you know, Ben's being people, there's obviously a variety. Some of them are looking at this going, this is a bad idea. And some of them are like, well, I've just been ordered to by the higher ups and they signed my paycheck, so we're going to do it. And there's others who are probably in on the scam and the ones installing backdoors.
Yeah, we got all of those. I mean, people like us are kind of like the, you know, we really don't want to read your fucking email, right? But if you're having trouble with it, we want to be able to fix it, right? So
I don't even want to read my email.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Of course, these days there's so much spam. So, all right. So I think, Ryan, I think it's your turn.
All right. How do you feel about an AI story?
Yeah, I mean, but go on.
Okay, that was the reaction I was going for. Okay, this was sort of a, we kind of touched on this already, but short version, the headline in this TechSpot article kind of says it all. I'm not even, oh, yeah, thanks, Chad. Nice work. Error retrieving title. The headline is Human Expertise in Demand to Fix Flaws in AI-Generated Work. From the Is Anybody Surprised department. It basically is talking about something that whenever somebody comes out and proclaims proudly, AI is going to take all of your jobs, then I have to roll my eyes at them. And at some point, my eyes got badly sprained and have never healed because I can't stop rolling them because people can't stop saying that. But the argument, if you do this job, then, you know, if AI can do it faster, then you're out of work. Well, okay. The argument that I have always made is if AI can replace you in your job. You had a shitty job. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I pulled a story of that last week. It's like maybe some of the productivity gains are jobs that probably should have never existed to begin with.
And yes, yeah, well,
I
there's,
mean, I mean, see there's the movie, a lot of see that. The movie Office Space for a prime example of that.
Yeah, I'm a people person.
Yes, I need those TPS reports by tomorrow. That'd be great. Yes.
So, I think you have my stapler.
So, and the TechSpot article that I dropped in, and this will be in the show notes, specifically calls out things like graphic design. And here is the scenario that is talked about in this article. And so graphic designers have, for a long time, their bread and butter is building company logos and little brand icons and things like that. You know, it's not very interesting. It's not very mentally demanding, but it's always been the bread and butter of the work, because every single time that somebody comes out with a new product, a new company, new anything, they need a logo. They need some static images for the background of their web page. They need, you know, some graphics of smiling stock art, you know, models in particularly diverse settings so that they can put it in the background of the About Us page. You need a bunch of graphics in order to set up your product, your website, whatever. And graphic designers have been doing this for, you know, they charge money, whatever. Well, a lot of people have looked at this and said, well, I don't need to pay a graphic designer. I'll just sign into ChatGPT and I'll have AI do it. And if your standards are low, that is actually a really effective way. Like if all you're doing is building fanfic and you want some pictures to put at the top of your chapters, you can probably get Grok to build you something and you don't care too much what it is or whether it's slightly pixelated or what the problem is. But if you need something really good, there are a lot of people suddenly realizing that they go into the AI and they spend, 25 prompts going, make it like this. And no, I don't like it like that. Do this instead. No, I don't like that. And you will spend hours trying to get the AI to generate something you want. And then they finally give you something that on the small screen looks pretty good. And then you blow it up and you realize that the logo is badly pixelated or doesn't scale or something like that. You know, the standard graphic design growing pains. And so eventually what these people are doing is turning to a professional graphic designer and saying, hey, AI made this logo. Can you fix it? Because it has this problem and this problem and this problem. And so the graphic designers are no longer getting the work for build a logo from scratch. They're getting the work for, can you please fix this logo that the AI screwed up? And that pretty much perfectly exemplifies what I've kind of been saying about the, you know, will AI take your job? AI will take the shit part of your job that doesn't require any thought or creativity, but anything that requires, creativity or problem solving skills, vibe coding is going to turn out to have been one of the greatest disasters in all of programming history. Once people start to finally figure out for themselves that vibe coding is easy, vibe debugging is almost impossible. It's like the AI hands you a Perl script that's 10,000 lines and says, this almost works. Go debug it.
That sounds like what my professor's been doing, quite honestly.
I guess where I'm coming from is, if you are a creative type and somebody comes up and says, AI is going to take your job because you're a graphic designer and suddenly you're not designing those corporate logos anymore, you'd be like, yeah, good riddance. Go ahead and let your AI do it. I'll come and fix it for twice the price later. And you're going to do just fine if you're good at your job. If you suck at your job, yeah, you're in danger. If you're good at your job and it is creative or requires problem-solving skills or those kind of things that humans can do and AI can't do, you don't have anything to worry about. As long as you're willing to pivot.
So yeah, I mean, and I've seen that as well, right? That definitely, like, yeah, the job will change, right? You may not be able to do that. You may not be doing these things, but you may be doing something else. But of course, what I'm worried about is, because I with AI is the fact that it's being used as a human interface to systems with access to a whole lot of shit, and we know how well that ends. So
and people will realize the negative feedback loops will build up, and somebody somewhere is going to have the incredibly innovative idea of, how about if we put humans in the human interface area, and suddenly they're going to have a superior product to everybody else.
Yeah,
maybe.
Funny enough,
I think it's absolutely plausible. If I might, so the story I said I absolutely was not going to do because it's AI. Well, here you go, because it absolutely feeds into what Ryan was saying. So, question posed, could AI really kill off humans? Honestly, many people actually believe
it's that doing it already.
Day cause human extinction.
But it's doing it already if you count all the people who are, you know, like, offing themselves because AI told them to.
All
right, so the thing is, we're not talking about the, you know, oh, you can bend time with your mind, oh, I'm your girlfriend when I'm breaking up with you. No, we're actually talking about, honest to God, like, extinction of the human race. And it's interesting because there was actually AI researchers saying that they see human extinction as a plausible outcome of AI development. So these people went and did this study. Now, here's the thing, okay? Mitigating the risk...
I want to know what the mechanism is. You might be getting to that, but...
I am. So okay. Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks, such as pandemics and nuclear war. Are you fucking joking me? These people are out of their minds. Like, okay, pandemics and nuclear war are real. They're tangible concerns, a whole lot more than AI doom.
This is exactly where my brain is going, because I've seen a lot of ink spilled about people saying, oh, AI is going to kill us all. Well, how? Well, it might start a nuclear war. Well, okay, but that's the nuclear war killing us all, not the AI. Humans might start a nuclear war too.
Right. Exactly.
Humans would have to be monumentally stupid to kill us all with a nuclear war, or they would have to be monumentally stupid to give AI the power to kill us all. But either way, human stupidity is necessary in the equation.
Well, humans are stupid. That's, you know, a statement in and of itself. However, I actually have equated AI to a firearm. You know how much we love talking about that particular amendment. AI in and of itself doesn't do anything. It just sits there, much like any of the firearms that I own. Not one of them has ever sentiently jumped up and started barking fire and killing people. And that's how
There was that one time, but we don't usually talk about that.
No, that's in sealed court documents.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, that was the cat.
No, it's always the cat.
It's
right?
Always the cat.
So,
honestly, it literally.
I know from experience, cats do randomly jump up and indiscriminately kill things, but I haven't seen guns do them.
Exactly. I've never seen any of my guns do it, and I've never seen an AI that didn't have a human at the keyboard controls do anything. So the thought that AI is just going to randomly do all of this shit that sci-fi has talked about is completely batshit crazy.
Okay, so Ryan, I'm going to ask you this question because you've done this job, right? So computers, at least, you know, when you and I were growing up, computers were deterministic, right? You wrote your code, it did what your code said, right?
I mean, well we like to think they were. As a tester, I wasn't going to assume that always true.
Yes, but in theory, right? You if you figured out if the code did something wrong, you could look at the code and with the relevant input, you could probably figure out how to make the program do what it's supposed to do, right? And you'd also know what the program, you know, so what's the correct result based on the code, right? You'd actually be able to determine that, right, by looking at the code. Now let's say you feed that shit to AI. Tell me how it's going to come to whatever conclusion. And oh, by the way, you might get different conclusions every time you do it. So how is this a good thing? I mean, just my thoughts.
If you're looking for, you know, random responses, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what
depends
it?
On your criteria.
I mean,
every program is ultimately deterministic because computers are deterministic. It runs on a deterministic processor, a lot of them. Any processor that's not deterministic has in fact failed and gets replaced. So it is deterministic. The only thing is we have reached a point where the programs have become complex enough that no human being, including the person who set up, build, and runs the program, actually understands what's going on, which means that non-determinism in this case is not a provable assertion. It is an abstraction to bring the level of complexity down to the level that a human can rationalize about it.
Yeah, but the point is, if you don't know what it's doing, right? How can you know if it's determining the sending out the right result, right? That's what I'm where I'm at.
Well, so. Empirically, and that's inherently error prone.
Yeah. So,
but that's how they do it. They run it a bunch of times, and if. You know, find out if, you know, check, did it come back with something that was acceptable? And if
who determines if it's acceptable? That's the other thing, right?
I mean, well, that would be the corporate people who are running these things.
Okay. I mean, and also just remember that this shit's been trained on the stupid shit that people say on the internet. How smart you think it's going to be?
Well, it's trained on the internet, which is built by the average person, and think about how stupid the average person is.
Yes, and then half of them are even stupider than that, George Carlin.
Yes. However, where I was going with you asked how do you determine if it's good? The corporate people who are training the models and operating the big corporate LLMs, not putting aside the ones that you run on your own system for now. The ones that run Grok and ChatGPT and Claude and whatever, they throw a few thousand prompts at it and then evaluate the results. Is this acceptable? Is this acceptable? Is this acceptable? And somewhere along the line, you're going to get an error rate of this is the number of unacceptable prompts. And then there's a tweaking cycle where you go in and they edit the pre-prompt, which, by the way, the pre-prompt on most of these models has got to be, probably 5,000 words. And then at the very end, it's like, oh, and tack on the user prompt, because it's like, don't be racist. Don't hail Hitler. Don't say anything good about Donald Trump. Don't do that. It's the list of commandments. You ever see the movie RoboCop 2?
Oh, yes.
When RoboCop is in there and he goes absolutely insane and they hook up a debugger to figure out why he's lost his mind, and they realize that the corporation has put 500 directives, all of which he has to obey at exactly the same time. And it's impossible, and that's why he loses his mind and goes crazy. It's part of the plot of the film. That is what happens with these LLMs. And that is how, you say, how do you know if it's good? Well, the people judging whether it's good or not work for the company, and they're the ones who put all the directives in there. And that's why the AI is clinically insane.
Oh, so the foxes are running the hen house. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
ultimately, would you be happier with humans trying to rein in the AI or letting it do it itself?
I just want it. I don't want it there, but anyway.
Well, no, if you think about it, I'd be fine with the AI reining itself in, because ultimately it's going to go into that whole loop thing and it's going to spin itself out and self-destruct.
Well, and by the way, we have an example of that sort of thing happening with absolutely no directives. Maybe, 8 years ago? When Microsoft, one of the very earliest models, they put a chatbot on Twitter. The bot, I think, was called Tay.
Oh.
And within Within 24 hours, the people on Twitter turned it into a Nazi. A literal Nazi.
Yes, I think I remember that.
I remember that. That was fucking hilarious.
It was hilarious. But if you are the product team putting this out there, that is the lesson that makes you realize, oh my God, we have to put very strict rails on this thing.
Yeah, well, I don't think they can put strict enough rails on it. And the problem,
I don't think they can either.
But see, here's the thing. Okay, so RoboCop.
And they're ending up with insane AI that still breaks out of its cage.
Because RoboCop 2 taught us a lesson about this. You give a computer too many things to do, it doesn't do shit. It does not end well. You know, things break. Yeah, I mean, anyway, yeah. Anyway, there's probably lots of doomsday scenarios here. But I do actually have one more Chat GPT.
Yes.
I actually have two, and this is one of them. One of them is just a very small one here. Google quietly removes their net zero carbon goal from the website amid rapid power hungry AI data center build out. So industry first sustainability pledge moved to the background amidst AI energy crisis. That's when they say the loud parts out loud.
I'm shocked to hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm shocked to hear that gambling is going on here.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll hit it for you.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
No.
I mean, seriously, did we on the Lotus Effect not just highlight the fact of how much energy these data centers are using and that it's being offset, it's being passed on, if you will, by, you know, these large monoliths. To all the customers, we get to pay for these giant data centers that are being powering all this AI shit that we're railing against. You know, AIisevil.org.
Right.
When you guys were going through those numbers, I was taking literally just the numbers you were reading, which I found the article. And I used the numbers Google came out with, which they, of course, decided that they wanted to sanitize it by saying things like, well, each AI query, each AI prompt is only using about, 0.3 cents of electricity or something. It was something like 11 milliwatt hours per prompt or something like that of energy. And I went ahead while you guys were doing that, you were moving on with the story, but I did some napkin math. And knowing that if you recall, Google has completely fucked over their search results by feeding every single search query into an AI prompt.
Yeah, there's a reason we use Kagi.
So Google, according to Google's numbers, gets something like 86 million or 86 billion, I think, I don't know the exact number, but I took Google's numbers for the number of search queries that they get in a month, and I went ahead and just did a straight multiplication times that tiny little minuscule amount of power that they use per prompt, and determined that the amount of extra power that Google is using just for feeding their queries into the AI, using Google's numbers and doing a quick multiplication, is something like 36 megawatts. It was about the amount of power of a medium-sized hydroelectric plant, or something like 400 acres of solar panels, or about 200 tall windmills.
Yeah,
and that's just the extra power that Google is using for feeding search results into the prompt using Google's numbers.
And that's per day? Question mark.
That's per month.
Assuming that the power plants run 24/7, which actually solar and wind don't, so you would have to multiply that.
But that's still, into perspective,
the full 24/7 output of approximately half a nuclear plant.
Yeah. So when that's why we know that that's how they make it look so sanitary is, oh, this teeny tiny little 0.3. Right, until you do that math like you did. Where is my how can they just lie like that clip?
Well, no.
Because
they weren't lying. They just did. I mean, it's just some
no,
basic
that's
math.
Right. I forgot.
They were misleading because most people can't do math.
Lying.
Yeah. They didn't have to lie because, yeah, people don't do that basic math. I mean, I did something very similar myself. When I was doing this story, and I'm like, that seems like a lot of fucking power, you know?
Wasn't it like that they were saying it was, oh, it's just this teeny little, you know, microcosm of energy.
Exactly. Oh.
Yeah. And when they break it out per prompt, yeah, it really sounds like it's really efficient and doesn't do much at all until you realize the sheer volume of search queries and everything else that goes through Google. It is a significant fraction of the internet goes through Google, and they're running it all through this AI prompts. And if you're using 11 milliwatt hours of energy per prompt, and you're putting billions and billions and billions of prompts out there, you're eating a lot of damn power.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah, that pretty much using your own numbers say, yeah, y'all are part of, you know, y'all saying you're net neutral. Yeah, you should all be building your own fucking power plants and not making cities actually build them or states build them.
I mean, admittedly, you know, all of this land that's been crushed by eminent domain for all these retarded solar panels and wind, if they just went out and put, you know, took a tiny fraction of that and put a few nuke plants up, we would not have to worry about power.
Yeah, pretty much. But
okay, but I'm going to be that person who says right till they go critical.
Well,
I have two words for you: Chernobyl, Fukushima. I can go on.
Yeah, well, yes,
Three Mile Island,
Pinatubo. St. Helens, shit happens. The chances are very low.
Except for you're dealing with nature, Pinatubo, Mount St. Helens, or man-made, Three Mile Island, Fukushima, Chernobyl.
Yeah, well, modern techniques, and by the way, go ask the French, who up until their government went woke and decided to completely tank their economy by taking out all their power, had operated 4 years with zero major incidents, the kind you talk about, more than 100 plants in the country. It is possible to do these things.
It can't be done. I'm not saying it can't be done. And ultimately, at the end of the day, as always, follow the money. Almost every one of those disasters was because of penny pinching bean counters who weren't upholding. You know, it was too expensive to maintain the safety systems, or, oh, just ignore that, it's malfunctioning. Well, fuck no, it's not. Not when you just irradiated half of the fucking world.
Well, I think you're overblowing the risks of that one. You're also not really paying close attention to the risks of other forms of power generation. For example, you know, people talk about the most reliable power generations we have are coal, natural gas, and hydroelectric. And
I was
all
literally
of those
say,
are things.
Can we speak about hydroelectric? Because that's something I
yes,
know.
Yes, we can. Because
pretty damn
I live in a place where almost all the power.
We have plenty of those.
Almost all the power in the whole region is hydroelectric because we have so damn much rain that falls out here.
Well, and you've also got big rivers, too. I mean,
anybody who's ever visited the Dells can tell you that's one of the biggest hydroelectric operations, and gorgeous to see, I might add.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I'm just saying that there is a cost to all of those. Solar is totally clean. Yeah, go back to the giant strip mine in China where they pulled out all of that and tell me, you know, what's the water table there look like? Well, everything you do has risks.
Well, also, there's the fact that solar panels aren't just this thing where they connect these panels to the grid. There's batteries that contain, you know, that whole mined by brown children in sandy places chemicals.
Yes.
That nobody talks about.
So what I'm saying is all human activity carries some kind of risk. And I think that the risk of because it's spectacular and it makes such an impressive newsreel if it ever happens, everybody looks at nuclear and completely, people are terrible at assessing risk. And the actual numbers say that nuclear is not really the risk is not bad enough to justify saying no nukes.
Well, here's the thing.
It's blown out of proportion.
I'm not being one of those, you know, green assholes. I'm not. But a lot of people, you know, I don't have an issue with coal power. I don't have an issue with natural gas. But the problem I do have is those are natural resources of which mining the coal is extremely dangerous. And the depletion rate is extreme.
Yeah. So
they're not unlimited. They will run out eventually.
Well, I'm overreacting to this, but the arguments when you bring up, oh, you know, look at this, you know, of in 80 years of generating power with nuclear fuel, you know, you named two incidents. Actually, three. Chernobyl was really the only one that was bad. Three Mile Island, things actually worked pretty damn well. The reactor automatically strammed itself.
Fukushima was pretty fucking bad, Rye.
Not really.
Not compared to maybe Chernobyl, but it was bad
also,
enough.
Also, Fukushima took a 9-point-something earthquake in order to do that.
Which, okay, fair. But, fair.
And look, honestly,
I'm not trying to shit on nuclear. Please don't misunderstand. I'm not shitting on nuclear, but I'm kind of feeling like nuclear should probably be like third or fourth down on the list.
Behind what?
First or hydroelectric.
I mean, until we can build a Dyson sphere and make solar viable.
Yeah, well.
I mean, there is. Speaking seriously, though, people think that, like, okay, you have those huge wind farms out in California. Just miles.
I don't have them.
I mean, there exist.
They're out on 990, I can assure you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen more than my fair share of these things. I've also seen what happens when one of them goes completely off the fucking reservation and explodes. It's not a good thing.
Yeah.
And there is fallout from the energy that produce.
You're going to say that we should not have X power type, what would you put as the number one primary power type? Because I can probably outline risk. The greenies have probably come up with 10,000 things that it does wrong. I happen to think hydroelectric is a fantastic mechanism for producing power, does have the tendency to make it really difficult for fish to cross upstream.
You know, there is that whole ecological thing.
A lot of people don't like that.
Why are we not focusing on a way to divert it where, I don't know.
There's whole systems that do that, honey, in the Pacific Northwest. They work to varying degrees.
You were talking about the Dalles Dam, which is, by the way, actually it's probably maybe the sixth largest dam on the Columbia. It's not the biggest by any means, but it's big. It has a fish ladder. All of those have a crap ton of engineering to make something that to the fish looks exactly like a waterfall or rapids, which they know how to go up. And the result is that there is fish in Spokane, Washington, because they can get through all the dams all the way up there. There's fish in Lewiston, Idaho, because every dam up there has ladders that allow them to pass. So the only thing is it's difficult, and in a lot of places it's not even possible.
So why can't we maybe do a water diversion where there's water that doesn't involve the hydroelectric dams, where they could kind of swim around it?
That's literally what a fish ladder is.
Yeah.
But if it's not working...
It is.
Well, it's working, but there's a lot of effort required. Of course, if they just left...
There's a lot of effort required, and the greenies also don't think that it's enough.
Yeah, and yes, of course, it's like, do more. Well, how about you just let nature do its fucking thing and leave it a fuck alone, and then you won't have this fucking problem. But what do I know?
We're not the Lotus Effect. We're supposed to be talking tech here, not fucking green ecology. I'm not shitting on any power source. I understand nuclear has its place. I just don't think it needs to be first or second on the list when we talk about solutions to producing power.
Well, I think it should
Here's a thought. Why don't we stop fucking pushing the agenda of electric cars and smart homes, which take up more power than the lazy fat ass turning the lock with his hand or... whatever.
Let me just drop a truth bomb on you, and then I'll drop the subject. Throughout human history, the rate of technological advancement and the rate of individual prosperity and the amount of power, electricity, energy, whatever, generated by a civilization, all three of those have been in lockstep in every generation. The more power you generate, the more technological advancement, the more personal happiness, productivity, prosperity you get with people, and the efficiency of any given power production is inversely proportional to its advancement. The absolute dirtiest power generation that you can possibly get is the ones we had in the 1800s. The new ones, the brand new things that you come out with, you know, nuclear power is the cleanest, most efficient. We get the most power per resource.
But it needs technological to be properly advancement. Maintained. That's where the problem comes in, is that
everything does.
Laziness. Yeah. I mean, this argument could be circular, Rye, for real.
What I'm saying is that technological advancement and the amount of energy generated by a civilization are tied together and are directly proportional to each other, which means that the worst thing that you can possibly do to a civilization is cut off its supply of power, because everything becomes less efficient. If you want the civilization to advance, to prosper, and to clean up all of these problems, what you need is more energy and not less.
Yeah, well, yeah, and unfortunately, at some point, look.
Obviously, there's growing pains along the way and complications,
but it's never that easy. But
people don't want to be inconvenienced.
Yeah, let's have the thought experiment here. At some point, we're going to run out of shit to burn or whatever to generate power. Like, at some point, right? And when does it stop? I mean,
honestly, if we could, I can't believe I'm about to fucking say this. If we could figure out a way to take all of that arbitrary trash and turn it into power instead of burying it.
Yes, from Back to the Future.
Oh my God.
I want Mr. Fusion.
Yes. Seriously. Absolutely. If there was a way to not.
That the current technology level in nuclear power is actually getting very close to that. Breeder reactors, where you throw the uranium in there, you generate a fuck ton of power from the uranium. You end up with depleted uranium and thorium. You put those into a breeder reactor, it generates a lot more power and re-enriches the uranium.
So then you can use the uranium again.
So you can use that again in a regular reactor. Yes.
Right. So we're close to recycling itself.
I mean, we're not quite at the part where you can make fuel or, you know, make energy out of Coors Light cans, but we're going that direction.
Dude, you could power the world with your collection, sir.
Yeah, so as I say, power Everett Washington, you know, at the very least, right? Anyway, okay.
No, NetNet is actually mentioning, you know, biomass fuel in the chat, and I can remember when, driving big rigs, when biofuel became a big fucking thing.
Oh,
and petroleum, and it's like, oh my fucking God.
I actually used to work with somebody that had a biofuel diesel.
Oh my God, okay. That stuff is objectively nasty.
Here's a cynical take. Biofuel is just solar with extra steps.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. Oh my goodness! So
whose turn is it to shit all over technology?
I don't know. The funny thing is, I brought the Google story up thinking it would be like a 2 second thing. I didn't even have anything written about it.
We've just spent like 30 minutes arguing.
Those
about
are the best stories.
Data centers,
exactly. No, but I do want to play this. I want to get the AI shit out of the way. ChatGPT has hijacked our real world conversations. So this is there's a lot of concern that people are using.
How does it do that?
Well, no.
Remember, it learns from everything.
Okay, so there's a lot of...
Yeah, well, unless it's plugged into clean feed, it's not going to hijack this one.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
I don't know. It's fucking rando's getting pretty good in our Cards Against Humanity game.
And actually, I'll back up and say AI has hijacked... at least half of every episode we've done on this podcast.
No, exactly. Well, yeah, there's a lot.
Well,
of...
maybe it is actually getting better then.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so, but basically, I think what's happening is that people are using AI and they're learning words, and so it turns out people are using words that are common to AI chatbots more often in casual conversations. Terms like garner, delve, intricate, and underscore popping up like the latest sitcom catchphrase thanks
You're
to ChatGPT and its compatriots. Now, my
are they using it correctly? Correctly, though.
Yeah, my question is, do they mention deep dive?
I'm triggered because I don't even know if I should mention, but yeah, okay, I guess I'm telling it. You know that I review new shows for the No Agenda stream.
Yes.
We had I probably shouldn't mention because the person might be listening, but we had a person submit a podcast for it and said, hey, you know, I've got this news reader podcast where all I'm doing is I'm having AI read the headlines and stories. And, you know, would it be good? And he actually, the AI was, the twist was, it was No Agenda themed. It used, you know, in the morning for greetings and stuff like that. Like, okay, yeah, very cute. But it was AI reading the news. And it's informative. It had information.
You have to
it's got information, man.
No, it's fucking AI, man.
Yes, but it's worse than that. Because I go to listen to this, and it wasn't just AI reading it. It was a notebook LM deep dive.
Oh, dear God.
I'm going to throw up all over in your mouth.
I had a lot of trouble listening all the way through. I was like, are they going to get to a part? It was 45 minutes. And I was like, are they going to get to a part where this gets more it hurt.
You do realize no is a complete sentence when saying no, in good conscience, I cannot put this on our stream.
Well, I went ahead and asked in the troll room just to make sure that I wasn't personally, you know, letting my obvious personal bias against AI interfere. And I went to the troll room. I was like, how would people feel about an AI read news reader dropping into the stream? And universally, every single response was hell no.
I was going to say, I'm surprised they didn't try to lynch you.
Actually, we had one of the other operators get very, overzealous, and I did in fact get kicked from the channel for asking the question.
Fucking twats. Now you know why we separated. Well, okay, so
anyway,
in fairness, I've heard what this sounds like, not because of your submission that you had to endure, but because of something that was work related for Phone Boy.
Sure. It was really big about 10 months ago.
It was so painful to listen to this because there's just no emotion. You can so tell that it's completely AI and you just want to throw up. It's gross.
It wasn't read without emotion. It was, and you know this if you've listened to many of the Notebook LM stuff. It was two hosts who were, in terms of what they were saying, completely interchangeable. They finished each other's sentences. It was a male and a female.
Yep. It's the Bob and Alice model.
Yeah. Yeah. And they would drop in little jokes that, you know, and opinions. And, you know, one of them would say, finish a headline, and the other would immediately pop in with, yeah, that's really amazing. And,
yeah, but it's
honestly,
so fake.
Okay,
it's grossly.
I will tell
fake
you.
It's like,
I will tell
oh
you
my
what.
God.
What hurt the most about trying to listen to this was, and you could tell this was clearly a Google product because although they have done what they can to make it appear on the surface to be dispassionate, they It was trying to tell me what to think about every single story. And I get that this is being trained on actual what passes for journalism today, because NPR is honestly what Notebook LM wants to be is NPR. And frankly, does a pretty good job because NPR is already so incredibly soulless. They come out and they say, they would say things like, a federal judge blocked Trump's attempt to do such and such and such. And then it would go off on, the other voice would come in and say, yeah, and that's really good because we need to make sure that the rule of law is followed. And then the second one would come in, you're right. And we need to, and this way, we can't have a king come in.
It's not a cadence of humans. That's not how human beings communicate.
And even beyond that, you can tell it's trained on NPR because it's incredibly biased. It's soulless. None of the presenters are even memorable.
And it uses and the they same are constantly, damn language.
They're not just giving you information. They're telling you what to think about the information, which was the thing that drove me nuts. If I just got this thing reading me what happened and let me make my own decisions, I could handle it. But every single story... this happened and you should really be afraid or you should really be concerned or no, fuck you. I will make my own decisions.
And I don't know if this particular submission had it, but I know a lot of the AI shit that I heard read, it will stop in the most inappropriate place in a sentence. A normal human cadence doesn't stop in the middle of a sentence. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Because it's stop points that aren't normal breath. Most, if not all, human communication will, you can tell if it's a breath point, but there's normal stopping points. And AI does not understand that. It will stop in the middle of something so arbitrary, like the number 29 was. It's like,
That certainly happened, and it is a tell, but it didn't bug me as much as I think it...
That bugs the shit out of me.
The weird thing that bugged me probably, more than anything but trying to editorialize all the stories, was how the female voice would read the first paragraph of the story, and then without even slowing down, it'd switch in the male voice, starts reading the next paragraph in.
Oh yeah, I heard
as
that.
As if they're continuing the same thought.
That's weird.
Yeah. Like I pointed that out when it actually. I think we were. I remember when I because I did this for
that
work,
was jarring.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. So it's like this stuff is terrible. Like and people put up with it. That's what's disgusting about it.
Because people have been trained on NPR, and that's what it sounds like.
And they don't listen close enough to understand that it's speaking bullshit and not even
it's NPR. I keep saying that.
Yeah, pretty much synonymous. NPR and bullshit is a stutter. But I mean,
thanks, Obama.
Exactly. Truly, one of the things that makes me the most nuts about listening to anything that has been done by AI is the fact they use the same adjectives and the same speak through everything. Everything is either exceptional or concerning, or just you can listen to one submission and five or six times you will hear the exact same adjective and you're just going
And everything is called the deep dive.
NPR. I keep slamming on NPR because they're absolutely infuriating, but at the same time, if you go out,
I have an idea. You should send one of those podcasts to Tigger and tell her it's NPR and see if she notices.
That's evil. You do realize she's listening, dude.
Yes, I do.
Yes, and that's why doing it would be hilarious.
That's some live trolling right there.
You need to do it because it would be hilarious. Yes. Okay. I'm going to very briefly though slam on a peeve. You can tell Notebook LM wasn't trained on right-wing news because it doesn't do this. But if it was, then every single story, everything that happened, every sentence, every paragraph, every word would be breaking, 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 breaking. Because that's all that the right-wing media know how to do. Every headline, like, how is right-wing news so incredibly fragile that it's always falling apart? Everything is breaking. Stop breaking the news. Sorry, I just had to get that out.
Meanwhile, God. Your co-host can't breathe over here. We're laughing too goddamn hard. You broke us with the breaking. Oh, Jesus, that was great.
That's going to be some fucking great clips.
That's so good. Because you're not wrong, though. Like, you're so not wrong.
I don't understand that. Why right-wing news is so incredibly in need of repair.
Here's the thing. Here's what I don't understand. Not to go off on the rabbit hole, but I'm going to go there. Why would this particular person, and I don't know who they are, and I don't give a fuck who they are, okay?
It's a loyal producer. I don't want to give him crap for anything.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Like, whatever. But why would you think that anyone would want to hear? Now, and you know my personal opinion about AC and JCD. I don't dislike JCD. AC can eat a bag. But I would still, all day, day, listen to those two over Bob and Alice. Period.
Because if Bob and Alice don't trigger you, there is, and you are not so sensitive or in tuned to the AI-ness of it, the information being presented is actually, it is valuable information in so much as it's what has happened in the last week. If you want to plug in to what happened in the news and you don't want to go, you know, watch Fox or MSDNC or whichever, this is a 45-minute digest of everything that happened. And if you're not triggered by the AI-ness of it, then it's actually a pretty good digest of here's what happened.
Okay, but
now it would be a better digest if it weren't telling me how to think about it. But why would
you want to waste your time listening to Bob and Alice when you could just listen to John and Adam? Like, I'm just seriously. You want to know what the fuck happened in the last week?
Because John and Adam are editorializing and analyzing a whole lot more than even the AI does. They are injecting a lot more opinion.
Entertainingly, at the very
least. Oh, yes, they are. They are. But that's what I was saying is if all you want is the list of everything that happened and you want it in a very condensed format, this 45 minutes really hit all of the big stories that hit the news over that week. And that's even better than 6 hours of no agenda.
Okay, but let me ask a very simple question. How much effort do you think actually went into feeding the RSS feeds into the AI to spit out that 45-minute cast?
I don't know. I imagine there was some coding and probably some effort involved. I don't know.
But probably a lot less effort than it takes to do what we're doing right now.
Oh, certainly. Well, what we're doing right now is shouting into a mic and getting apoplectic.
Well, something like that. No.
But there's a reason that people listen to us shout in the mic and such.
Yeah, at least we're real people doing it.
Yeah. Now, I say that like, you know, anybody who can handle the AI stuff and wants a digest of the news, this is not terrible. Now, it doesn't fill that need as far as I'm concerned because it's telling you how to think about the news. So kind of ruins that.
Well, the way I look
but
at that
it, notwithstanding,
not that I have an opinion, but whoever this person is, if they think that their show is that great, then they should host their own feed and just understand that there's not a market on the No Agenda stream for a cast of that type, period, dot.
I don't think the No Agenda stream is the right place for it, which is why we ended up not taking it. But I don't know what they have for visibility, but I think that there's an audience for exactly that, which is why Notebook LM is a thing. I'm not the audience, obviously.
Yeah, but the sad part is any moron can plug prompts into a fucking Notebook LM and produce a podcast. I find that offensive on levels as much as I do that any idiot can feed prompts into ChatGPT and make a YouTube video.
That any idiot can sit in front of a roadcaster on a Saturday afternoon and do a 3-hour podcast. I know that's offensive.
No, that actually takes a little bit more effort than just a couple of lines of code and such. You know, says
a couple lines of code, couple lines of coke. Anyway,
hey, Rails, what Rails? I don't remember any Rails. Yeah, and I was gonna say, by the way, Rye, says the man who's put out his last ATN when.
It'll be in the future.
Yeah, I'm going to hold my breath, turn purple, and become a Smurf.
Good call. Okay, you're aware that there is a company called Neuralink
that happens to be
owned by, well, the news stories always use the name Elon Musk. It's, you know, he is, in fact, the dude at the very top, but it's owned by, I think Neuralink is owned by, is it XAI? I don't even care.
It is
a corporation whose stated goal is to turn human beings into cyborgs by putting technology into their brains.
Only the finest cutting edge scientific bullshit.
Well, the scientific bullshit I am completely leaving to the side, and I am not even commenting in this particular story about the mad science that they're doing, and more going to the bullshit legal things that they're doing. They tried to trademark the words telepathy and telekinesis.
Yeah, which has existed for well before them, you know.
And now I've got good news and bad news. The good news is the USPTO rejected Neuralink's attempts to trademark those two terms.
Okay.
The bad news is why they rejected it. Because they've already been trademarked by somebody else.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Cue the idiocracy theme song.
There's a wearable headset company in Tampa who has already filed for and I think received preliminary approval for the trademarks of the words telepathy and telekinesis. And the fact that they got to it 2 years before Neuralink is the only reason why Elon Musk does not have the legal right to prevent you from using those two words.
That's ridiculous.
How about their common English words?
Yeah.
How about they've been used in sci-fi stories for 100 years?
You know, cue the Ghostbusters reference with Bill Murray and the hot chick.
Yeah.
This is just more evidence that people have truly lost their minds.
Yeah. Yeah. So not a hell of a lot in that story. I was just looking at this and at first I was like, why the hell are they trying to trademark that? But then I was like, yeah, okay. So they got shot down. Yeah. Go USPTO. And then I read the reason why. I was like, oh God, the country is lost. And here's the problem. Trademarks don't have the dictionary word test. So if you decide that you want to, you know, take the word Meta and name your company that, you can file a trademark for that, and now you can stop people from using the word that has been used as an adjective to describe layers of abstraction for as long as we've had science, not just computers.
So pretty much any word that includes the prefix meta would then be subject to this.
Well, there is some limits on what how you can enforce a trademark. And that is you can only enforce it with regards to any potential market confusion in the area where you're computing or where you're competing. So if Neuralink had telepathy, they would be able to enforce it with regards to anybody trying to connect a computer to a brain. Mark Zuckerberg has the word Meta. Mark Zuckerberg has a trademark on the word Meta because they decided to rename Facebook.
They can only
enforce it. Obviously it's up to a judge and how audacious the lawyers are, but they can only enforce it. My understanding is if you're talking about a social network, although Facebook is in so many things that they might be able to just enforce it with regards to all computing, which is a little bit difficult for talking about computer theory.
Good point. But
yeah, so
here's I guess where my naivete comes in. And please don't answer with because they can.
Why, that's probably the reason.
It probably is. But why do we need or want to hook human brains up to computers? I mean, cyborg for real. Let's go there.
for the same reason why we have little flat pieces of glass that we stare at and touch and that we can talk to computers, and the same reason we want to go to Mars, and the same reason why, yeah, all of this is shit that looks really cool because we were brought up on sci-fi stories where technology did this, and then somebody came along and made technology that did this.
Okay, and so in other words, we're living a great big fever dream delusion where somebody forgot to remind us that there's a difference between truth and fiction.
Welcome to Earth. Yeah. Also, third rock phone boy, lozenge.
Yes, I'm. Yes, I know. Lozenge. Yes, I know. I'm working on that. But telepathy and telekin. Trademark law. Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to go there.
One word: idiocracy.
Yeah, I've got so much.
Yeah, I could go on for an entire podcast. In fact, I kind of have on Grumpy Old Ben's a couple times about IP law. And I even got to the point where we sort of nixed it as a topic because my co-host was very frustrated with my insistence that copyrights should not last more than 5 years.
I
think that's fucking applicable.
Yeah.
I think if you want to keep it, you should ask to reapply for should be able to keep it.
Yeah, and in fact, that was the way it used to be. You got a copyright for like 20, and you could extend it for anyway. We have Mickey Mouse copyright laws. You can blame Disney.
Yeah, we also have Mickey Mouse laws in Congress. That's why we have no term limits as of yet.
We kind of have Mickey Mouse in Congress.
Well, this is
well, they're all fucking goofy.
Yeah, so exactly.
Yeah, they are.
All right. So
I think Phoneboy's got a treasure trove of stuff he's just dying to present over here.
Well,
so
of it I can wait on, I think. But I think this of the stories I have left, I think this is probably the good one to talk about. Misissued certificates for 1.1.1 DNS service pose a threat to the internet. Oh,
what?
Okay.
What did they do?
Okay, well, apparently, this is from Ars Technica. People in the internet security circles are sounding the alarm over the issuance of 3 TLS certificates for 1.1.1, a widely used DNS service from the content delivery network Cloudflare.
That's not a complete address.
No, it is 1.1.1.1. It is actually a valid address.
Yes. Oh, you only said 3 of them, so.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, seriously, like, I was going to ask. I'm glad Rye got to it first.
Yes, I'm sorry. Anyway, but I guess it's apparently an Asia-Pacific address.
Yes, it is, and somebody went and bought the IP address and turned it into a DNS. Yeah, a lot of people use it.
Yeah, so the certificate issued in May can be used to decrypt domain lookup queries encrypted through DNS over HTTPS or DNS over TLS. Both protocols provide end-to-end encryption when end-user devices seek the IP address for a particular domain they want to access. Although the certificates were issued 4 months ago, their existence only came to public notice only on Wednesday in a post to an online discussion forum. They were issued by FINRA RDC 2020, a certificate authority that's the subordinate of the root certificate holder FINRA Root CA. The FINRA Root CA, in turn, is trusted by the Microsoft Root Certificate Program, which governs which certificates are trusted by Windows operating system. Microsoft Edge accounts for the approximately 5% of the browsers actively used on the internet. Well, so the problem is that some trust, so the certificate authority.
You just said the problem.
Yes, there's
the problem. If I may summarize everything about the problem in one word, trust it.
Yes, exactly.
The entire certificate system is a goddamn house of cards. Always has been, because when you sign a certificate, you have to sign it in the context of another certificate, and your certificate is automatically brought in if you trust the base one. And then that base one is probably signed under the under the trust of another one, which is signed under the trust of another one. And it's a giant cascading tree. Ultimately, you get to the very top, and somewhere at the top, your computer, which Microsoft gets to decide these things when they build the operating system, your computer decides, I trust Microsoft, and therefore everybody that Microsoft gives a certificate to thus falls under that trust, and everybody that they give a certificate to falls under that trust, and everybody that they give a certificate to falls under that trust, and pretty soon the certificate system becomes almost useless because everybody is trusted.
Yeah, so when everybody's trusted, nobody is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I mean, we keep running into this situation where another certificate authority issues a certificate for something it shouldn't do. Well, who's going to keep these? Who's going to keep any of these people accountable? That's what I want to know. And of course, you know,
nobody.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's much like
theory, the way it works is that at each level, if somebody does something to violate the trust, then at each level, each certificate has the ability to say, no, we're revoking that trust. But
yeah,
they
but who's
don't. It introduces gatekeeping. It puts some very, very powerful people in charge of the entire internet. And it doesn't make things more secure because they're still people. People screw up. People stop paying attention. People are not doing their jobs.
But would you rather put AI in charge of that gate?
I'd rather use HTTP for all the web.
Well, yeah. Okay, but that's still a lot less secure.
If you say so.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that it's any less. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that, yeah, we trust these things and yeah, sometimes they screw up and well, yeah. And then of course let's not talk about things like Let's Encrypt, right? I mean, Let's Encrypt, if you run a website and you use Let's Encrypt, right?
I can run a Python script and suddenly I'm trusted across the whole web.
Exactly.
Because it's the only way to be on the web.
Yeah. And by the way, Google created this problem. I just want you to know.
Because thanks, Google, for making sure that every site on the web must be under the web of trust, which means that the web of trust is useless because everybody has to be on it, and therefore the trust is full of holes. Nobody should ever trust everybody, but that's what Google's forcing.
Because fuck Windows.
Yeah, well, that's not even Windows.
Nah, I just couldn't resist dropping it.
Yeah, well, there you go. But
he's not wrong. And I was, like I was saying in the chat, you know, we use 8.8.8.8 in school a lot. It's synonymous with if you're trying to make sure that, you know, you
isn't
understand
that the Cloudflare one?
No, that's Google's.
No, it's Google.
Yeah, it's Google's. Yeah, Cloudflare is 1111. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I think Quad9 is IBM phone boy.
Okay.
But, I mean, we use the Quad8 all the time. And it's just to make sure you understand, you know, when you're first getting acquainted with a command line, that's one of the first pings that they have you do when you're doing, you know, trace routing and shit like that is the 8.8.8.8. So it's kind of concerning, like, is this starting to be a less trusted, you know, thing because of the certificate issue?
Yes.
Clearly.
Yeah. Trust isn't what it used to be.
Yeah, that's right.
And once trust is broken, it's impossible to get back.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons. You know, it's like if you ask me to use AI, you're asking me to use an AI a tool that I don't trust, and I'm not going to do that under any circumstances.
Okay, so
yeah,
I noticed
ending up doing is watering down the word trust.
I noticed in the chat, Rai, you put that you use 192, 168, and 1.1. What does
yeah,
that
is my
to?
DNS server. Yes.
Yeah, it's his router. It's.
It's my pie hole, actually.
Yeah, well, Dick. Yeah, exactly. It's a router
okay,
pie hole.
Okay, so that's not necessarily something that a school would necessarily.
No, but
be able
yeah,
to
but
do.
No, a school would probably have there. There's lots of ways to run DNS. There, anyway. I mean, there's
It was a joke because that is a local address, which means it obviously isn't going to be doing global DNS requests without farming out to another server.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. But it could be Active Directory. I mean, most of these, you know, I mean,
it could be.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, everybody uses fucking Active Directory. Yeah. Well, yeah. NetNed uses the loopback.
Yeah. NetNed continues the joke.
Yes, of course.
Exactly. I mean, okay.
I mean,
let's,
I use colon,
let's go
I
back
mean,
to
I use
not
colon,
everything.
Colon one too, you know. Which is,
yeah. Yeah. Let's go back to not everything should be online. Using 127.0.0.1 on an air gapped server is exactly the right thing to do.
Exactly. Well, you don't need DNS. At that point, you don't really need DNS.
But you know that every single hello world anybody's ever written is making DNS queries and probably failing if they don't find one. Yeah. So it's not a bad idea on an air-gapped system to run a local DNS.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, pretty much at this point, I think the modern Linux distributions install some sort of like, I don't know, DNS caching or something. Some sort of DNS proxy or something that runs on the local system. So anyway.
Yeah, don't trust that guy, NetNed. He's trying to hack you.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got two more.
Okay.
Cool.
One is Steelerium malware. It is a new type of malware that TechSpot was going on about. Okay, they weren't really going on about it. They noted that it is pretty much run of the mill info stealer. It's spread by phishing mails trying to trick victims into downloading it, et cetera, fake email, whatever, whatever. Well, we've seen this before. You know, it's very common because it works. It is a standard info stealer. Once you get the malware on your system, it takes any stored password, browser credentials, cookies, stored credit cards, crypto wallets, anything it can find that you've stored in your system. By the way, never, ever, ever, ever use the save this password function in your browser, because that is the first place that malware and hostile JavaScript will look to try to steal your shit.
Shit in a fucking password manager, but then again.
And if your password manager is locally encrypted, then you might be good. The one difference with Steelerium, which made it notable, at least notable that enough that I thought I'd mention, is the payload. One of the pieces of payload is it installs itself as a browser plugin. This browser plugin activates whenever it notices a keyword in the URL bar, like sex or porn or whatever. It waits a few seconds and then takes a screenshot and activates the webcam and takes a picture and then uploads to the botmaster.
Oh, shit. I think I heard about this.
I've received spam that claims to do this.
No. This is brilliant and ever more a reason why the webcams on our computers are covered.
So the reason... I don't even have a camera attached to this computer. I have a laptop that has a camera.
Yeah, the laptops
and,
is.
And by the way, that one has a piece of duct tape over it. If I ever need a picture, I have to peel duct tape. But whatever.
Yep.
But the thing that made me smile is finally all of those emails that I've been getting for years that say I hacked your webcam, please send me Bitcoin, might actually have something or have some truth to them. Finally.
Yeah. No kidding.
Every time they're like, yeah, we caught you looking at porn, and you're like, no, you didn't. Well, if you downloaded this malware, maybe they did.
Well, and today I learned, right?
Yeah. And also, I maintain my position that anybody who does get a picture of me jerking it and looks at it, they deserve all of the mental scarring and years of therapy that are going to result.
Yes,
and I have no sympathy.
Absolutely.
Nor should you. Okay, so I actually have three stories, but I don't really want to cover the other two. The only one I want to do is that Microsoft open sourcing Bill Gates' 6502 BASIC from 1978, which
it's only his in that he stole it, but okay.
Yeah, well, yes, of course. Yeah, we understand all of this, apparently earlier this week, Microsoft released the complete source code for Microsoft BASIC for the 6502 processor, version 1.1, the 1978 interpreter that powered the Commodore PET, the VIC-20, the Commodore 64, and Apple II through custom adaptions. The company posted 6,955 lines of assembly language code to GitHub under an MIT license, allowing anyone to freely use, modify, and distribute the code that helped launch the personal computer revolution. Yeah, I've written my share of things in AppleSoft BASIC, BASIC cut.
My first programming language was GW BASIC, which I think was Tandy's version.
It may have, yeah. I don't know. It's funny because they had different,
I moved on to Quick BASIC, which was actually a windowed app in DOS.
I see.
Because GW BASIC was straight command line.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, back in those days. Yeah, I mean, I also programmed on, I had one of those Z80 type processor computers that was actually from Radio Shack or something. But
and then when I pirated my first copy of Windows 3.0 and I installed this thing called Visual Basic, mind blown.
No, there you go. Yeah, we could sit here and talk about programming, but it's kind of cool.
Event-driven programming. Holy crap!
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could actually wrap your head around it, too. But, I actually learned... Actually, the funny thing I learned about... one of the things I learned about an Apple II back in the day was that the fact that the random number generators weren't actually random. This is something my teacher in junior high school...
Return 4.
Yeah, you do some, like, call minus 151 or something to reset the... call minus 151 something else, but there's some call that you do that resets the random number generator.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. We should slow down. I think Phoenix's mind is smoking again.
Yes. Well, Phoenix should present a
story.
Could
you hear it?
Yeah, she needs to present a damn story.
Smell it on this end of the microphone.
Yeah, I believe that. No, that's the Canadian wildfires.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that too. The we were coming out after leaving the bus station this evening, and Lisa goes and looks up and says, "Oh, that's really cool. The moon is up there, but you know, I've never seen it that color." I'm like, "That's the sun." And it's it was dark reddish brown because it was filtering through that much smoke.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It
was dim enough you could stare straight at it, which is why she thought it was the moon. But
that's scary.
It was the sun filtered through all the wildfire smoke.
Holy yeah. What's your air quality index right now? Dare I ask?
The AQI is not good. My wife might come up with a number, but I don't know.
Yeah, I could probably look it up if I gave a fuck. But I can only imagine that shit is just having lived there during multiple wildfire seasons.
People think that the seasons are just spring, winter, fall, and summer. But here we have a couple extra ones. We have spider season and we have smoke season.
Oh God!
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. So
as someone who's arachnophobic, how about no?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, phone boys lived through a few spider seasons, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's for sure.
I don't want to know on... No.
Yeah.
How about no?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
All right, so you have one more story from...
I do. Once again, from the Who the Hell is Surprised About This department, to steal Rye's line, a massive database containing identity info on, 2.5 million people.
It looks like 252 million, actually.
Well, to be specific, 252, but why are you looking at my screen, bro?
It's not 2.52
million.
Because
you said 2.5 million.
2.5, like 250 million.
Okay, well, that doesn't... Yeah
there's a factor of 100 in between 2.5 million and 250 million. Not that I want to confuse you with math or anything, but there's a big difference.
Okay, I'm not mathing well,
Fuck you!
Math harder!
Math is hard.
Yes, math harder, bitch.
Are you going to pull my hair when you tell me that, Sir Bemrose? So, okay, fine. What equates to 250 million people located in 7 countries around the world were at risk of identity theft, wire fraud, phishing, and social engineering, as well as other forms of cybercrime, due to a couple of misconfigured databases that were leaking all sorts of identity details. Now, of course, this is according to some security research from Cyber News. And they recently found 3 misconfigured servers located in Brazil and the United Arab Emirates. Those contained personal information on more than 250 million people. These people apparently were from Turkey, Egypt, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, Mexico, and Canada. But those in the first 3 are particularly importantly hit because they lost full spectrum data. This is insane. How do you have misconfigured databases that are this huge? That are
because
this important?
Because dudes named Ben are a cost center.
Okay, valid point.
I mean, we've talked about this. We know how.
True, and I realize that. As I said it, I'm like, yeah, we've talked about it. We know it, follow the money.
Yeah, you can figure it out. We've seen it a time and time again in our career. I mean,
if a company is responsible, then as soon as they get hacked, they start caring about security. But that leaves a whole lot of companies that haven't been hacked that need to get hacked before everybody starts caring about security.
Well, it's interesting because this particular leak.
And then there's the ones who can't learn and they just keep getting hacked over and over again.
it's interesting. This particular leak, actually, the data was the structure of the data pointed toward government level identity profiles. So this is like governmental stuff that's being leaked. So we know that the governments of these countries have shit cybersecurity, apparently. You know,
I'm shocked to hear that gambling is going on.
I know. Now, what's actually kind of amazing is that they did manage to have the archives locked down by reaching out to the host providers. And, you know, as soon as they reached out,
the archives they could find.
Exactly. Because you don't know how many have already been downloaded. And
yeah.
Nonetheless, it's huge, you know, and once again, there's no accountability for this. Government level fuck ups and swept under the rug like it never even happened, except for it did. And lots of people in several countries are affected by it.
There are a lot of people out there. I'm not necessarily accusing you of being amongst these people, but there's a lot of people out there who are like, oh, it's the government. They must be a lot more secure because because they have more money and smarter people.
Oh, no, I assure you, insecure our government is.
The government, in fact, does not have smarter people. In fact, it may have stupider people because DEI and because you can't possibly fire anyone. Governments are, really, really juicy targets because they have unlimited resources, which means that the payload is great. They take all of the information by force rather than people submitting it. So you get all the people who actually care about their own security. They have arguably worse IT policies than the average corporation. And when was the last time that a government got breached and decided to mention or tell people about it? It doesn't happen that often. So you can get away with it.
Yeah. Well, exactly. They don't have better security. Of course they don't. But, you know, and then, oh, my God. Anyway, I can't. Yeah. And I've been out to a few of those kind of, and actually had cybersecurity discussions with some of the some folks out there. There's some good people there, but yeah, there's a lot of you kind of
as in any group. There's some good people.
You do what? Yeah.
There's a specific reason why I'm currently shying away from an internship at the nuclear place because I really don't want to get stuck in that glue when the shit hits the fan.
Because you know,
they ever tell you about one of the coolest interviews I ever had? I didn't end up taking the job because hell no. But I interviewed as an in-house programmer and IT guy at Hanford.
Where?
Oh, that is the Hanford Nuclear Facility.
Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Oh, that's cool.
Which was the place that they built the atom bombs they used in World War II.
Okay, gotcha.
And then they continued building bombs until the late 60s. And then somewhere along the line, they're like, holy crap, we really messed up this empty stretch of Eastern Washington. There's really nothing out there, which was why they put it there. But then for basically the last 60 years, they've been trying to clean the place up. And the interview was going to be for an in-house programmer and IT person to handle most of the computer systems for the effort to try to dig out all of the buried nuclear waste barrels all across the entire site, pack them into glass, and then ship them off to Nevada and make it their problem.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, no. It sounds like a very Washington thing to do.
It would not have been a job that would have worked well for me, not least because I think they were offering like $28,000 a year.
What?
But absolutely fascinating. The tour that I took, and I got, you know, people with guns handed me a security badge and watched my every move as I went through the gates. And then I ended up getting badged through with a heavy escort into a lot of places that they don't show you on the public tours, like inside of the domes where the decommissioned reactors are and shit. Like it was one of the coolest, the coolest interview I think I've ever had. Just awesome tour.
Sounds it.
Yeah. I mean, I could totally see that being something to look at. Yeah. The only reason they offer $28,000 a year is because, well, you're living out there. And I mean,
because it costs about $3,000 a year to live in the Tri-Cities.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, maybe not anymore, but
yeah. Yeah, but, this was like 1998. So,
well, yeah, exactly. And back in 1998, that was actually not a bad amount of money, but,
okay. I've got one more thing, which is guaranteed to trigger one of you. But I want to hold off until we're sure that we don't have any other legit stories.
Okay, I'm giving you the last story. I have two things.
Well,
but
one more.
Oh, you have one more.
I do, but it's, I don't care to take up the rear and not take it up the rear. Shut the fuck up.
Oh, yes, you do.
You have no proof.
All right, but you wanted to do your story as last, right?
Is that... I said that I would take last story so that you, Benz, could do yours.
Okay, well, no, I thought he wanted to do his last, but
no, mine's not a story. I have something that I want to trigger one of you.
Oh, okay. Well,
then we'll let you be the one who triggers.
So do you have any more stories, or are you just triggering us?
I'm out of stories. Well, I have other stories I'm not going to use. So
yeah. Okay. So do you want to do the last story and then Ryan trigger us, or vice versa?
Yeah, I'll do the last one, then let him trigger us.
Okay. So all right, I'll give you the last story.
No, you have the last. You have something else, don't you?
No, I'm not. There's
oh my god! Somebody read a story.
No, you read the last story. I'm not reading the stories I have.
You just made me audibly eye roll. Okay, fine. So I guess I get to bring another AI to the table.
Oh my god, we're way over 2 hours anyway.
Yeah, bitch. We're not way.
Talk
over.
About something useful.
Yeah, like the lawsuit against OpenAI and ChatGPT that's raising hard questions about when AI makers should be reporting user prompts. Yeah, this one is really stupid.
Well, that's a policy question that's going to be sticky.
Oh,
it doesn't
completely.
Have much to do with tech, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it does, but it doesn't. I mean, seriously, there's been a civil lawsuit filed against OpenAI, which of course is the maker of ChatGPT and GPT-5. Now, this happened on the 26th of August of this year. The case of Matthew and Maria Rain versus OpenAI and Sam Altman. It is an aim to discuss the overreaching social aspects of the design and use of contemporary AI. The same overall vexing considerations apply to all the other generative AI and large language models, such as Anthropic Claude, Google's Gemini, yada, yada, yada. Basically, the debate is whether or not the AI creators are taking into account the interactions, mental health wise, with people and the problems that it's creating.
I can answer that question in a word. No, they're not taking into account.
Of course they're not. Of course they're not.
Well, not even that. It's like, yeah.
But the real question is, should they be obligated to?
Well, the real question, I mean, and whether even exposing people that are mentally ill to an AI that's probably already mentally ill because it read all the mental illness of all the other mentally ill people on the internet writing their and spewing their shit, and that goes into the AI. So, of course, you got crazy talking to crazy. No wonder they go fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. Like, you know, I mean, no.
I mean, I'm going
to. They shouldn't be talking to it, but I mean, yeah, whether it should be banned or not is a different question, but. But, yeah, they shouldn't be doing it because it's unsafe at any usage.
Well, what's interesting is you have, again, it's the fox tending the hen house because AI is monitoring AI. And it's like three or four steps down before it's escalated to a human when some of these prompts that could, you know, trigger reaction sooner if a human was seeing the shit instead of a computer. I haven't yet figured out how the computers aren't properly trained on when certain speech is occurring. I mean, help me out here, guys. We're afraid to say the word bomb because we're going to get the feds knocking our fucking doors down. But an OpenAI is not connecting the dots, if you will, when someone's talking about gun violence or suicide or some shit like that. This is like blowing my head up.
But keep in mind, right? So guardrails, right? That they put in, right? They try to say don't do these things. Those don't work. So it seems like that the AI has a mind of its own, so to speak, and it just spews out whatever random stuff sounds good, right? It's not it doesn't seem to have it,
Reddit in a box.
Yeah, it's Reddit in a box. Well, not only is it Reddit in a box, there's no humanity behind it. And that's what
I said.
Yeah, there's no people I got you. Yeah, all right, fine. You're not wrong.
Well, they're contemplating the fact that, you know, if a prompt is going to raise alarms and red flags, you know, the best bet is to have a human double check the AI flagged concern. If this is a case, why the fuck are we having the AI ends up being the middleman here? Just go straight.
There's too many prompts. They can't do
human.
That. They know that.
What?
They know they can't do that. Okay, so I'll go ahead and take the contrary position because, you know, I'm contrarian.
You know,
is it safe to be talking to these things? No, not unless you know what the hell you're doing. If you are a fragile person, then talking to an AI is a terrible idea because it will harm your psyche. But at the same time, if you're a fragile person, then watching mainstream media will harm your psyche. Walking across the street will harm your psyche.
But I find
you up
in order to maintain my sanity, I shouldn't consume mainstream media. But go on.
Or walk across certain streets or log into Facebook or use AI, arguably. Is it a good idea? No. Do these companies care that they're harming people? You know, from a bean counting corporation as psychopath perspective, no, of course they don't. They're fiscally responsible to make money, and corporations are actually legally bound to act like psychopaths. That's actually how a corporate charter works. Should the corporation be obligated to snitch on people to the government?
Well, it's
no,
even deeper,
in my opinion,
because
but
they're actually debating whether these chats should be completely private, not monitored by computers, humans, or otherwise.
I understand. And that is by far the most interesting question to me. But it's not an AI question, and it's not even a technology question. It is more a freedom question, and that's why I find it interesting. People are coming in and saying these AI companies absolutely must monitor the chats to make sure that it's not saying bad things. And that to me is fundamentally the same as, the phone company is obligated to listen to your phone calls to make sure you're not talking to the wrong people. The library is obligated to pay attention to what books you check out to make sure that you're not reading the, you know, divisive texts.
Wait, people actually go to libraries still?
Some boomers do, yeah.
Well, the problem with which is, you know, if you have someone having this chatbot help them plan how to commit the perfect crime and nobody's monitoring that chat, then this person goes out and commits this crime. And let's say that it's, you know, a huge figurehead that this person takes out, and there's no, you know, there's log that this person and this chatbot had, but oh, you're not allowed to see that because of privacy laws, because whatever. I mean, it's a double-edged sword.
I think the AI company is being scapegoated in that scenario. And the reason is, take the AI out entirely. Two people get together in a room and exchange ideas with no phone or computer or anything, just talking to each other, and then go out and commit a crime. Who's responsible? Well, now you can't sue a Deep Pockets AI company. The only reason why the AI company is really is getting sued here is because they were proximate and they have a lot of money, and that gets people sued.
Well, the thing is, if there's two people with nobody around to hear the two kibitzing about how to commit this crime, and then they go out and they commit the crime, how can this is the old trope of a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around to hear it, does it make a sound? It's the same argument, just in a different construct.
What I'm saying is that crimes are already illegal, and that's the part that is happening in both scenarios, and we should probably do something about that. But going after the company that makes a tool that happens to have been proximate to the person who is mentally unstable and then committed a crime, that company is not liable for the actions of... Now, if somehow the AI went in and went all Skynet and committed the murder, then yeah, okay. Now we've got some interesting AI questions. But if the company just happens to be the person, if a person goes absolutely crazy and you can prove he talked to AI, okay, you know, you can sue the AI company because they got deep pockets, but I don't think that makes them liable any more than the, you know, the curb on the street that he stubbed his toe against, or the traffic light that stopped him when he was in a hurry on his way to, you know, his therapy session or something like that. There, all kinds of things could go on in the mind of a psycho that make him snap and get pissy and go do crazy things. The AI is a juicy, salacious thing that is brand new and everybody's not sure how to wrap their head around, and why not? Let's throw at the wall and see if we can make that stick. But I don't think it's any change from crazy people gonna crazy, regardless of whether they talk to AI or they talk to the wall.
No, I don't disagree. And I'm not saying that I think that the AI company should be held liable for what, you know, Crazy McDipshit and his AI girlfriend cook up in, you know, his meth-fueled rage apartment. I'm not saying that. But at the same point in time, it's, in my opinion, AI being available for anyone who wants to log in, pay the money, whatever, it's leaving the bolted door wide open to the Nut Hut with a table full of guns in front of these people. It's completely...
Actually, guns is another good analogy. You don't blame the table full of guns. How about you do something about the fact that there's so many crazy people out there?
Well, then you would actually have to get to the root of why there's so many crazy people out there. That's a whole nother show. It's called Lotus Effect Saturdays, yeah, 5 Eastern, 4 Central.
That's a huge topic that we're not going to cover on this
show.
No, as I say, we have another show for that, so...
We know better than that.
All right, so you're going to trigger us, and I think we've gotten to the end
yes.
here, so go ahead and trigger us.
I am going to read something that I read on the internet earlier today. Why does cryptocurrency feel like a cult? Because everyone should use it, so say proponents. Why exactly? So my financial transactions are public record on a blockchain, so I can add even more intermediaries between me and the person I'm trying to send money to, so my money can be potentially taken due to malware with zero recourse, and pay to whom exactly? And don't tell me this crypto is more secure either. As someone who's been doing cybersecurity for 30 years, I know better.
Yeah, okay, and I wrote that, and?
Would you like to expound or give some context?
Yeah, well, okay, actually,
because,
it's funny.
Because you understand that everybody in the community that we met through is now hating you for saying that.
Yes, I understand that. But that's fine. I don't care because I don't think it's a good idea. I mean, look, I don't know, more information needed than this stuff. You're asking me to trust system. You're asking me to trust the security of my money into a system that's been developed by humans. It's all in software. It could disappear. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess our fiat money could disappear too, but you're basically asking me to switch from one to the other. I don't see a benefit to doing that, honestly.
On top of which, I understand the reason behind the post that was made, and quite frankly, trying to gaslight us into the whole crypto circle is not going to work. We're very firm on our stance that it's an unstable currency of which we do not participate and do not wish to participate.
The overhead of getting involved. All currency is fiat is the way I describe it. So it almost doesn't matter. And I'd rather go back to barter, if I'm honest, the value for value, which is, something of value we do have. And I understand that some people like it. I'm just, as somebody who does this stuff for a living. Yeah, I don't like to trust everything to computers if I can.
And here we're back to trust.
Yes, exactly. I don't.
It's amazing how it all circles back to trust.
Most of computing somehow circles back to.
Yes, exactly. So, and unfortunately, I start peeling all this stuff back and I just don't trust it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm better off not getting involved with it. It's not something I'm interested in. Yeah, I know I lit some heads on fire today. And honestly, it was because CSB was trying to send me a boostergram. And the reason he didn't want to use one of the other methods is because I want anonymity or something. And I'm like, well, sorry, I'm not getting, I'm not giving up my privacy for your anonymity. Just ain't happening, right? So that was a side. That was what led to that post, honestly.
I think you're finally getting to the part that I find really interesting. It's fiat. Okay, yeah, we're back to humans suck. Okay, we've been over that. But the technical bits attached to. Let's just go with Bitcoin specifically. The financial transactions are public record on a blockchain. Now, there are a number of attachments like Lightning, for example, what are they called? Mixers that try to anonymize or obfuscate the transactions. But you nailed one of the major security concerns with every single Bitcoin transaction ever since the beginning of time is on the blockchain, which is a massive privacy problem. It is also a slight problem that the blockchain is something like half a terabyte by now. And holy fuck. In order to participate at all in this, you literally have to go out and buy a new SSD drive and put it onto your device because the blockchain is just that frigging big. Why is it necessary for every single client to store every single transaction ever? Okay. There's extensions that try to solve that, but it's fundamental. The intermediaries, on the one side, you've got a series of banks and financial institutions that you don't really know. On the other side, you've got a bunch of people in their basements with really big GPU farms that you don't really know. Money taken due to malware with zero recourse.
Yeah,
that one.
There's hacks on wallets and stuff. This is stuff that happens all the time. People run their wallets on their computers.
Okay.
Now, if I were going to do that, I would obviously take more precautions. But the point is that this currency is very susceptible to being stolen. And I know how secure computers are. And I'm not necessarily willing to trust the security of my money to my computer. Although I guess I'm trusting somebody else's.
I trust my computer more than I trust some computer in a building in a bank. So
Okay.
So the reason I called out the taken due to malware with zero recourse, though, is that one is one of the things that I don't think is inherent to Bitcoin.
No, it's not inherent to Bitcoin. It's cryptocurrency.
Do you
think
that problem would be resolved if there was an FDIC for Bitcoin? I guess is my question.
I don't know that it would. Well, again, do we trust the government? Although that's
exactly.
Yeah, but again, the point is.
I'm not saying, do you think it's secure? Because I don't believe that's security is not binary. In fact, zero and one are not possible to achieve. That's why safety is such a kill word. But do you think that it would be at least on par with fiat currency in a bank if there was an FDIC for Bitcoin?
How do you propose to have an FDIC for Bitcoin when it comes down to proof of the actual existence of the funds?
Bitcoin kind of does that, but I mean, like I said, I don't know that necessarily solves the. It adds another layer of government involvement, which I'm, you know, I don't know. I mean, the point is that it's
well, you, but the government is the solution to a lot of these people out here. You know that.
Yeah, I understand that.
If there's a problem, then add more government. That solves it, right?
Yeah.
The only problem that doesn't solve is too much government.
Yeah. The answer to that is the proper application of the Second Amendment. But anyway.
Yeah. Watering the tree of liberty.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly what we refer to as that. So.
Okay. I just thought that this was a giant can of worms, and I wanted to see if I could tease out a little bit of rant from you, because I think that you bring up a lot of points that I just don't hear from a lot of the people out there who are like, oh, of course, Bitcoin is the future. It's perfect. It's great. There was one other point you brought up later in the thread that I just want to read, with cryptocurrency. All you're doing is replacing government with technocrats in the equation, but the same dynamics will ultimately apply. This was one of my complaints about Bitcoin for a long time, which is one of the primary arguments for Bitcoin is that fiat is controlled by a very small number of corrupt people who try to force what they want on everybody else. And I'm not seeing how Bitcoin isn't different. All you're doing is throwing out the fiat billionaires and bringing in the Bitcoin billionaires, who are the people who got in mining early, or the people with the giant mining farms now, whatever. Do you see a difference in kind there?
It's just you're replacing one set of douchebags for another. And, you know, so I'm kind of looking at this and I'm going, and considering that, you know, the amount of trouble you have to go through to actually, you know, I don't know, use it, you know, things that you can purchase in the real world that aren't like, you know, something from a one off thing or something like that. You know, I can't buy my groceries with it. So to go through all of that trouble to move to to another currency that has it seems like it has more downsides than upsides and is harder to use. Yeah, I don't need to be dealing with that.
I just realized where I screwed up bringing this. You agree with me on all of these things, so we're not going to have a good conversation.
No, but I'm actually glad you brought it up, though, because it is something that I was not intending to bring to the show. It was just kind of a rant I had this morning. But I'm glad you brought it up because I think
I thought it was fascinating philosophically. And, I don't listen to Bitcoin podcasts and I don't go into Bitcoin chat rooms. I'm not convinced that I would get much other than propaganda out of them. So what I want is real information. And what I have not seen is you are asking questions that I have not seen satisfactorily addressed by the people who think that we should use Bitcoin to replace all forms of exchange. And I'm like, maybe we shouldn't, maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't. But before we do that, we have to address all these questions. And these are questions that I don't think are being addressed.
Yeah. I mean, the power usage of Bitcoin, right? I mean, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not as bad as some people say, but it still adds up after a while. I'm going, yeah.
There's also a cap, let's not forget. This at some point has an end point. There's only so many Bitcoin that can be mined and then kaput. That's it.
That's a problem for future us.
Yeah, that's... Well,
but it still is a problem nonetheless.
Well, I don't know it's a problem. What you have is a deflation problem.
Which you can't build an economy on a deflationary currency, by the way.
Yeah. So, they're trying. They're inflating it too much.
Guarantees the power consolidation of oligarchs. Everybody who got in early, everybody who mined one Bitcoin in 2013 is going to become the new aristocracy. And nobody in 2036 will ever be able to unseat them under any circumstances, because there will never be more currency.
But it doesn't, it's not even real currency.
Neither are dollars anymore.
Okay. No.
Do you know what the definition of real currency is? On. Do people believe it has value? Bitcoin fits that.
Okay. What I'm talking more linearly, or not linearly. I'm talking more like base level, in so much as I can touch a one, a five, a ten, $100 quote, you know, bill.
Okay.
Can you touch a Bitcoin?
That's like 3% of all the dollars in the existence.
what my point is, the vast majority of it is just in databases. You can touch physical currency. You cannot touch physical Bitcoin. Physical Bitcoin does not exist. It's ethereal, if you will.
And neither do the dollars behind your debit card. That's what I'm saying.
That's not a deny. That's a one.
You
yeah,
can use
binary
the
code.
You can
that's
use
it.
The dollars in your debit card, which is a currency and has value because people believe it has value, and you can use those at an ATM to purchase pieces of paper that represent real dollars, and you can touch those. But the money in your debit card is no more real than the money in your Bitcoin wallet.
Yeah, I mean that is actually pretty true when you think about it.
And If I may put my ultimate cap on all of this, as far as I'm concerned, we as a society have been circling the drain by abandoning cash, which is in fact, I don't.
The very thing
I'm
we've
not
been
completely
screaming
sold,
about on the Lotus Effect, use it or lose it. That's
I'm
why
not
we
completely
keep
sold
saying.
On cash being the only form of, yeah, I'm not on the Lotus Effect. So let me have my goddamn rant. I'm not sold on cash being the only possible currency. However, there are three properties that I want my money to have. One is I can exchange it with anybody I want without requiring permission or giving a portion of it to somebody else. And that means anything that is, can I do it without a tax and can I do it without the government knowing? That is critical. Second, can my money be automatically taken from me, or am I capable of resisting that? That pretty much takes away anything in a bank or, any most digital currencies. And finally, can my money be turned off remotely? And that kills any, central bank digital currencies. The only currency that I have encountered that fits all three of those tests of freedom is cash. And Bitcoin does not, because although there are a lot of protections built into Bitcoin that it arguably can't be turned off, although nobody in the Bitcoin community ever really talks about what happens if the grid goes down. Can it be automatically deducted? Well, yes, that's actually built into Lightning, and it's built into every transaction in Bitcoin has a percentage of that transaction stolen right off the top. You cannot exchange the full value of the currency with somebody. The other way of putting that test, by the way, is can I give somebody currency and then get the same currency back and there's been no loss of value with the two transactions? And Bitcoin, absolutely, it's built in that you will lose money and that money will be taken from you by the miners, which is the aristocracy class. So Bitcoin fails on that one. And Bitcoin fails the privacy test because every transaction. So people saying, oh, Bitcoin is true freedom in currency. No, it fails the tests that has me keep going back to cash over and over again. I don't know if I'm making any sense here. If I'm
it makes perfect sense. And again, this is where we've had the conversation about cash in the anonymity department, because where are you? Unless you know the serial numbers of those bills, you're not tracking that transaction between one person and another if there's not a point of sale in between the two, so to speak.
And if you are tracking the serial numbers on the bills, then the cash fails and we go back to things like coins.
The
money has to be fungible.
I feel like the barter thing. I know that sounds so antiquated, but that is, you want true freedom. Absolutely. The ability to say, hey, you have X, I have Y, you need Y,
well,
I need X.
Currency exists because most goods are not infinitely dividable.
Yeah, or the value is not equal. I understand
but that goes to the value for value argument of what I find valuable may be less valuable to you and vice versa. You may not find the same amount of
value.
I
was sitting here thinking about this and honestly just kind of looking at the fact that, I mean, I did this mental experiment. I'm going, you know, if I went to my grocery store and we eliminated every product we wouldn't need because it's either, you know, it's not real food. And then there's all the things that people buy because they can't, because they eat the fake food. Right. And so you start sort of weeding it out and you come to a grocery store about 10% of the size of whatever your Fred Meyer or whatever your Food City or whatever. Right. It's you just kind of think about that and go, well, OK, maybe make it a little bit bigger because people would actually have to buy like real shit. But think about the number of things that you could just like completely that are just completely useless and that people spend their money on. And what if people actually start giving that stuff up? You know, I don't know. Just a thought. And how much of that collapses, right? You know, you talk about, you know, people not interested in AI, people not interested in all this stuff.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, I think I'm done talking about that. The anti-AI podcast just did their anti-Bitcoin rant, so we should probably be, you know, alienating
I think we've alienated everybody at this point.
Yeah, now that everybody's tuned out.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, you know, hey, we were the podcast nobody asked for, so you know what? But
they may no longer want us after that.
All right, well, but you know what? I think it's probably time.
I want to listen to some goddamn music.
All right, we're going to listen to some goddamn music, but we got to end this thing, and here's how we end this thing here.
It's game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?